Some people go on their travels and bring back trinkets or clothes, or if you're like me, a weird amount of jams. But Melissa Clark brings home ideas for recipes. Whether for the New York Times or her own cookbooks, Melissa is one of our greatest recipe writers, and we wanted some of the stories behind her inspirations. Hey, Melissa.
Hey, Francis.
Great to have you here.
Great to be here.
You are a native New Yorker, but as far as I can remember, you've had like a real thing for French food professionally.
That is true. I grew up in Brooklyn, and my family spent every single summer, every August, in France. We house exchanged before house exchanging became a thing. We would get this actual physical book. This was before the internet. Imagine, take your mind back.
Okay.
Just remember the days when you would actually have to write handwritten or hand typed, I guess we would type them, letters on blue onion skin mailers, and we would mail them to the, there'd be this book that would list all of the people who are interested in exchanging their house. And we would just send letters back and forth. And there was no Google, there was no way to check up on these people, and you just blindly left your house and went to their house. But for me, what that meant was I went to their kitchens, and I learned how to cook in France.
As a kid?
Well, because both my parents worked, they're both psychiatrists, and so they had August off, because back in the day, psychiatrists took the whole month of August, and so they were really busy, and they didn't do a lot of cooking, especially with me, during the regular year. But in the summer, we'd go to France, and we would cook together as a family, and so I really, you know, people, French chefs say, oh, I learned how to cook at my grandmother's knee, and I kind of learned how to cook at my parents' knees in France, and we weren't cooking exactly French food. We weren't cooking, I don't even know what New York food is. We were cooking this crazy hybrid, and it was very spur of the moment, and it was very inspired by what we could find at the markets and what we were eating in the restaurants. And that is absolutely the foundation of the way I cook today.
Oh, no kidding. And so do you have like specific food memories from when you were a girl, like being in this new, wonderful, weird place?
Yeah, because every summer there was something new. You know, I mean, I remember not wanting to eat frog's legs for a really, really, really long time, you know, and then I remember the moment where I was like, huh. That smells kind of garlicky and kind of good. I guess I was a teenager at that point. And, you know, that. So I remember that first bite. And I remember, you know, my mother would, they lied to me all the time. So I remember, my mother would say, here, have some steak. And, you know, neglecting to mention that it was actually horse steak.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Or, you know, rabbit was chicken. You know, I mean, they just totally lied. And so I would try, which I forgive them for. Although I do tell my daughter the truth. But, I tried a lot of things, and it was always so exciting. But I also remember the moments of choice when I got to choose what I was going to try. Like the moment I first had a snail, right? So you've got the escargot. You're in France. You've got that garlic butter, and it's all green. And you, as a kid, you take your baguette. You stick it in the butter, but you do not touch the snails because, ew, right? And I just, you know, would love that snail butter so much. And I remember taking my fork and finally tasting a snail. And I was like, wow, this is really good. It's earthy. It kind of tastes like mushrooms. So take that memory and fast forward 40 years. And now I take snail butter and I take shrimp and mushrooms and I make a dish because really snails sort of taste like shrimp crossed with mushrooms, right? And so this stuff stays with me and it's stuff that I still, like those memories still influence how I cook.
What's another recipe you came up with from those memories?
From France, I remember, you know, being a little kid, and this is actually more, I barely remember eating this, but I remember the physicality of making this. So we'd always take sandwiches to the beach. And in France, there's a type of sandwich called a pan bagnat. And it is basically it's a tuna fish salad sandwich, except that instead of mayonnaise, you had the Provençal flavors of tomatoes and olives and capers and tons of olive oil.
That sounds great.
And in restaurants, what they do is they weight these sandwiches down. You know, they make the sandwiches, you take a big country loaf, or you could use a baguette. You'd almost hollow out the middle, and you'd stuff it full of tuna and, you know, all those flavors I just mentioned, and then you'd flatten it out with a weight. But if you are my parents and you have two small children, you make them sit on the sandwich. So I just remember being a little kid and sort of like sitting on this big, you know, it was a giant loaf of bread. And I was sitting there in my bathing suit, really wanting to go to the beach. Like, can we go now? No, you got to sit on the sandwich.
You're making lunch, honey.
Exactly.
Keep sitting.
And it was well wrapped. I mean, we wrapped it in many layers of foil, so it was definitely protected. But it was just this funny memory. It was like this cushion, you know, this tuna fish cushion.
Yeah.
And And so this is something that I also, you know, I took this memory and I love to make a pan bagnat. And when my daughter was young, I could get her to sit on the sandwich. Especially when she was like 3 and 4. Now she's you know, she's almost 11 and she looks at me and she rolls her eyes. I'm like, okay, fine. And I take a big frying pan and I fill it with cans.
I mean, to be fair, an 11-year-old, like, it doesn't matter what you do, like, the eyes are going to roll.
The eyes are going to roll, right. Yeah, no, I think I could probably bribe her to sit on the sandwich, but, you know, I mean, but it's this funny, it's this funny tradition of physically, you know, helping make the food before I could cook. I'm feeling almost a little bit proud of that.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So now you can cook
very
well. As an adult, though, when you're traveling, are you actively looking for recipes, or are you just kind of, like, do your thing and then let the inspiration hit you?
Both. I always actively, you know, I actively look for recipes. I actively look for flavor combinations I haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. So more so than asking someone, oh, how do I make that dish? You know, especially when I'm traveling, like when I was in India, you know, it was hard to communicate because, you know, I didn't speak the language and often I was with a group, so it was hard to talk to the actual cook and get the recipe, but the flavors stayed with me.
Okay.
And when I came back, I just craved spices in this intense way that, and I mean, if I'm going to cook with spices, I'm probably not going to cook with as many spices as I tasted in India. So it pushed me in that direction. And I was combining them in ways that I hadn't done before. So I'll look for those flavor combinations.
Okay.
There was this one dish that I remember that, so I had just gotten back. I went to India last fall and I was craving spices. And I wasn't just craving them in Indian food. I was craving them in everything, like, for example, skillet pasta with like a cheesy skillet pasta, you know, something where normally I would skew Italian. I'd get my tomato sauce and my cheese. It's like, nope. I need spices. So I added a ton of spices. I added, you know, cumin and I added turmeric and garam masala. And I created this really spicy skillet pasta. And I put cheddar cheese all over the top and onions in there. And it was absolutely delicious.
That sounds
and
so good.
It was really good, but it wasn't. I mean, it was just trying to recapture this memory, but it wasn't even something I ate. It was just these scents and these fragrances of spices that I needed. I felt like I needed them.
Yeah, like it didn't have to be literal, right? It was impressionistic.
Exactly. I loved it so much. I wanted to be back there. And since I couldn't get back there, I had to cook my way to a state of being.
Right on. I'll try to think about that the next time I'm like at home, like just trying to like bake an eggplant parmesan for my kid and be like cooking my way to a state of being. She's like, Daddy, when's eggplant
time? I'm hungry.
Yeah. And okay, the last thing I have to ask you is, so I have a note here from my producer saying she will never speak to me again if I don't ask you about the podcast.
Ooh, the podcast is coming. It's coming, Francis. So it's going to launch on September 4th and it's called Weeknight Kitchen. And it's basically you guys in my kitchen while I'm cooking dinner. I'm cooking a real meal and you're listening to me do it. And it's so much fun. It's every night cooking. This is the stuff that I feed my family. This is the stuff that I want you to feed your family. I want you to make it for your daughter. This is really the food that means the most to me. So come share it in my kitchen.
Right on. And we will cook to a state of being with you.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks for coming in, Melissa.
Thank you.
Melissa Clark is the author of Dinner, Changing the Game. Get your 4-year-old ready, or borrow one, because Melissa left us with a recipe for that squashable pan bagnat. Find it at splendidtable.org. And while you're there, you can subscribe to her new podcast, Weeknight Kitchen. Do it on the site or anywhere you get your podcasts. Coming up, Oakland chef Sarah Kiernan talking about her life-changing trips to Haiti. And the time has come to get thee to Milwaukee. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is The Splendid Table from APM.